Hello and welcome to today's talk. My name's Victoria and I'm part of the Maybridge Church family. It's great to have you with us as we continue our Radical King series, looking at the book of Matthew from the Bible, which is one man's eyewitness account of the life of Jesus. The BBC recently broadcast a drama called The Syndicate. Some of you may have watched it. It was the story of a group of friends who worked at a dog kennels and who bought a lottery ticket every week together as a syndicate. The plot involves a high-action chase to Monte Carlo, where they end up in a casino playing roulette for their ticket. Red they win, black they lose. And the amount at stake? £27 million. That's a big stake. A huge amount to risk. And I won't tell you which way it went in case you want to watch it. But just think about what was at stake. In the passage that we're looking at today, Jesus is telling his closest group of followers, the 12 disciples, that the stakes of following him are very high indeed. This is part of a long speech that Jesus is making. Last week, Chloe helped us look at the first part as Jesus started to give his disciples instructions before sending them out on a short mission trip to tell others about him. In this second part, Jesus continues to tell of the troubles and persecution that will surely come from all sides. And whether you're already a Christian or you're thinking of becoming a Christian, then here Jesus is talking about the stark reality of what it means to follow him. It doesn't always make for easy listening, but it's important that we all know what we're signing up for. So picture the scene. The disciples are listening to Jesus. They're probably feeling slightly apprehensive, to say the least, especially as Jesus starts to warn of the dangers to come. Matthew was writing for first century Christians who knew all about enduring hardship, but it also has principles for all subsequent followers of Jesus, and that includes us. So let's start by reading Matthew chapter 10, verse 24. A student is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the student to be like his teacher and the servant like his master. If the head of the house has been called Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household? Jesus starts by making the point that the disciples shouldn't want to be better than him. It's enough that they seek to be like him. And equally, they should anticipate being treated the same way. Jesus was receiving a lot of opposition from the religious leaders of the day because he was standing for truth, whereas they'd twisted religion and were using it for their own agenda. Jesus says to his disciples, "Look, they frequently call me Beelzebub," which was a name for the devil. It was about as strong an insult as you could get. And he says, in effect, "If they call me that, you're going to get it too." But then after this hard-hitting news, which must have left the disciples pretty worried, Jesus gives three reasons why they shouldn't be afraid. So let's look at them. "So do not be afraid of them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed, or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows." First, Jesus encourages the disciples by saying, "One day, everybody will know the truth about me." When Jesus started teaching, he told his message to a limited number of people and had often called them to secrecy. But now the message was beginning to go public, and there would come a time when it would be broadcast everywhere, when it would be shouted from the rooftops. When Jesus comes to earth again, then everything will be put right. All the lies will be revealed. Those seen to cheat justice on earth will not cheat it in eternity. Secondly, Jesus reminds them that as his followers, their eternal destiny is secure. The worst that persecutors can do is kill the body. But it's not the body that matters. That's temporary. It's what's inside that counts. When Jesus says that it's God that they should fear, he's pointing out the bigger picture. The disciples, like most of us, were probably very good at just looking at what was right in front of them. We all tend to worry about the wrong things. We get caught up in the world around us and don't think beyond it. But maybe there is more to the world than we thought. Maybe a God that we never recognise does exist. Thirdly, fear should be banished because God is aware of everything that happens. There's no such thing as luck, chance or accident. God is in ultimate control. He even knows when sparrows fall. We are so loved and valued by God, the creator of the entire universe. He cares about what happens to us more than we do so ourselves. And he knows us so intimately, he even knows how much hair we have. Jesus then goes on to give even more encouragement. Whoever acknowledges me before others, I will also acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever disowns me before others, I will disown before my Father in heaven. Jesus speaks here of everyone's choices having great consequences. In fact, the stakes are eternal. Jesus tells the disciples that whoever acknowledges him on earth, he will speak for them before God. There will be a day of judgment when everyone has to give a final answer for how they've lived their lives. But if someone has acknowledged Jesus, he promises to stand beside them and be their advocate. He will speak for them. What an amazing promise that is. Wouldn't it be great to have Jesus there doing all the talking for us as we stand before God? Let's read on. Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Now, this may sound a bit odd. Surely this is counter to what we think of about the coming and teaching of Jesus. We send cards at Christmas with peace on earth on. But what this means is that though the message of Jesus itself is peaceful and eventually peace will be the outcome, in the meantime, its effect will inevitably bring division. Jesus didn't come to bring a peace that glosses over deep differences for the sake of superficial harmony. Jesus goes on to warn that family members will turn against one another, that a decision to follow Jesus will cause conflict. Now, there are those of you listening today who know what it means to step away from your family and commit yourself to Jesus. It's not easy. It can cause problems and hostility. Our goals, priorities and values all become different. There are even those in the world for whom a decision to follow Jesus means being totally cut off from family and being thrown out from the community. They would recognise exactly what Jesus was speaking of here. Let's read on. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Again, it may sound worrying to hear Jesus say that anyone who loves their family more than him is not worthy of him. But he's not saying that we're not to love our families, only that we are to put him first. Now, this would have been even more radical to first century Jews than it is sounds to us, because family was hugely important to them. Even a Jewish teacher wouldn't ask this of their pupils. But Jesus calls us to make him our absolute number one priority. Our love for Jesus should exceed even the greatest love for those that we have who are closest to us. And although the disciples had yet to associate the cross with Jesus, they would have been familiar with the horrific nature of crucifixion. It wasn't an uncommon sight, and they knew that taking up your cross only meant one thing, to die. This must have been rather a shocking illustration for them. The picture of the cross is symbolic of the demand for total commitment to Jesus, even to physical death. Jesus clearly meant that following him meant dying to ourselves. This then is the paradox of Christianity. It may sound absurd and totally contradictory, but it's only in giving up our lives to follow Jesus that we truly discover what life really is. The world puts itself first. We live in a very self-centered culture that values power, popularity and financial security. But the more we chase after these things, the more we realise how empty they are, and ultimately living for ourselves only leads to death. The best way to enjoy life is to loosen our greedy grasp on the stuff of this world and follow Jesus, who promises us eternal life. We need to love him more than the things of this world, more than life itself. So what does all this mean for us today? First, we need to stand in the truth. So much of the world today lives with an undercurrent of lies, from fake news to the recent scandal of falsifying documents to get the big scoop. The world is no longer black and white in its thinking. It no longer believes in right and wrong. It's all relative. No longer is there absolute truth. As followers of Jesus, we cannot give in to these ideas. The world needs to hear the truth, and we need to proclaim it while strengthened by the fact that truth will win eventually. Jesus spent his time on earth helping the poor, the marginalised, standing up for justice. He challenged the social divides of the time. He showed righteous anger when people were profiting from others, all of which made him unpopular. And our lives should look the same. In practical ways, that might look like avoiding buying from organisations who exploit the poor, speaking up for fairness at work, supporting charities that work with refugees or trafficked people, challenging corruption anywhere we can. We need to show the world, in the way that we live, that we are not ashamed to be followers of Jesus. Secondly, the stakes are eternal. The good news about Jesus has great consequences. The stakes are eternal for every single family member, friend, or colleague that we know. And that makes this teaching relevant to every Christian in every era. The purpose of God has not changed. And apart from Jesus's brief ministry on earth, which lasted about 3 years, it's been left to us, his followers, the unqualified and the ordinary, to spread the good news. Christians are just everyday people who have chosen to follow Jesus and to take his way of living and to live it out to change the world around them, even when that world is often hostile and not receptive. We may not ourselves be involved in a large-scale assault on evil, but we can all be involved in the transformation of those around us, whether it's talking to our neighbours about what we believe or inviting colleagues onto an Alpha course. The teaching of Jesus is uncomfortable. It challenges people. But just as if we had known that the Titanic was going to sink on her maiden voyage, we would have warned those on board, even though they were having a great time. So we have an obligation to speak the truth to those around us. And if persecution or even the threat of it makes us draw back from speaking out for God, then in some way the devil has won. He may not have harmed us, but he has stopped us speaking out and spreading the good news of Jesus. Thirdly, we must make up our minds to accept trouble. For as long as there have been Christians, they've been abused and opposed. And in fact, persecution around the world is probably worse now than it ever before. Historically and currently, oppressive regimes have hated a religion that says God is more important than a leader or a party, and they've tried to stamp it out. And for us in 21st century Britain, we may not think persecution is relevant to us. Christianity is legal. But who knows what situations even this country may face in the future and how our lives as Christians might change. Are we prepared for that? Even now, there are broader principles that apply. We all face daily choices and that demonstrate our allegiance and submission to Jesus. We can expect in this life the worst that people can throw at us. They may laugh at us, belittle our faith, malign our character, and we may lose all that seems important, our job, our money, our family. Authentic Christianity is bound to lead to opposition and trials of some sort or another. So as we read this passage, the question perhaps we need to be asking ourselves is, are we willing to give up our lives to follow Jesus? To be a follower of Jesus is a dangerous undertaking. Just think back for a moment to those 12 disciples who were listening to Jesus. For most of them, what Jesus spoke of became a reality because it's widely accepted that 10 of them were killed for their faith. The stakes for us could be the same. Jesus does not offer an easy ride. Alice Cooper, the rock singer, said, "Drinking beer is easy. Trashing your hotel room is easy. Being a Christian, that's a tough call. That's real rebellion." Christianity is a whole new way of life. It's not a hobby or like following a political party. It's turning our back on our old way of living. It's death to self. It's a radical call from a radical king. Jesus sets the terms and we're not in a position to alter them. Our number one priority is to love God above all else, to give him the best of our time, money, energy and gifts. Are we willing to embrace this sacrifice? To get closer to God and to allow him to use us more. There are many stories I could leave you with as examples of those who have given everything, but this one is personal to me. My Auntie Dorothy was a missionary for 25 years in Pakistan. And she was there when independence was granted in 1947 and during the subsequent war for Kashmir, which was the area in which they served. It was really tough work and they faced relentless antagonism to the Christian faith and were often unceremoniously escorted out of villages. It was legal under Muslim law for converts to Christianity to be killed, and this often happened. As the fighting over Kashmir intensified, it became obvious that the missionaries must leave the area. And as they began to do so, they passed villages that were burning on fire, with many people being killed. The missionaries became separated. Lily, a close friend of my aunt's, was miraculously spared during an attack on a hospital, but their leader in the field, Ron Davis, sadly became caught up with a band of tribesmen. Ron was trying to escort Miriam, a Muslim who had recently converted to Christianity, and her son away from the fighting. The tribesman told Miriam that if she recited the Muslim creed, she would be released. Bravely, she refused. Ron cried out in her defence, "She cannot say it. She is a Christian." The tribesman shot Miriam dead. My aunt wrote, "It is remarkable that a Burmese woman who had been a Christian for such a short time bravely laid down her life for Jesus. What a challenge to us who have been nurtured since childhood in the Christian faith." The rebels then turned to Ron and said, "Are you ready to die?" Ron replied, "I am Ron Davis, a servant of Christ, and I am ready." Shots were fired and Ron died beside Miriam. My aunt was reported as missing in the British press, but was actually safe and lived with the photo of Ron up in memory till she died. Rhys Howes, the principal of the Bible College of Wales, where Ron trained, used to say, "You will never give your life until you have given everything else you have to give." Let's spend a few moments thinking about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Are we ready to give up everything to put Jesus first? Heavenly Father, thank you that you love and value us so much. Help us to be willing to pay the price, whatever the cost, to follow you to the end. And please give us courage for the times when that is tough. Please help us to trust in your promise of eternal security and to be strengthened by knowing you are always in control. May we be inspired by the examples we hear, and may we never stop proclaiming the good news that Jesus is Lord. Amen.